How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm Dandy Lion. Dandy-licious?
I don't know.
I'm something. Nice. How are you?
I'm okay. Just hanging in. It's been a very busy weekend.
Yeah, it has for you. It has.
Yeah, it's homecoming weekend at my daughter's school. And not only that, since she's in marching band, she's had competitions. She's marched in parades, plus homecoming dance. So we've been running around like crazy. And that's just for her. That's not even for the second one, the youngest one that has to go everywhere.
So you got some social butterflies there.
Well, so far, yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I am ready to hear what you have for us this week.
Okay. You ready to hit it running? And we'll chat. This is a little bit shorter, so we'll chat at the end because I have some things that we need to discuss. You know. Okay. All right. You ready to go?
Yep.
We all know things are not always as they seem, Jen. From the outside, your neighbor or your friend has the perfect life. We all know this from all the perfect Facebook posts we see.
The fake books.
Today, we are going to Niantic, Connecticut, a small northeastern town with a population just under 3,000. In 1985, a horrific scene would rattle this quaint community as murder came for one of their own. Dun, dun, dun. Ellen Sherman was a wife and a mother who was 5 months pregnant with her baby from her husband of 16 years, Ed Sherman. Now, Ellen worked in her family's business, which was a publishing house. Ed was a local instructor at Three Rivers Community College, where he taught business classes. Now, Ed was extremely intelligent, so much so that he was a card-carrying member of Mensa, the Smart People Club, you know, the one that we'll never get invited to, ever.
Speak for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It was a warm summer weekend when Ed left Ellen at home and went sailing for the weekend with his friends. After Ed departed the home, he called Ellen on Friday evening just to remind her to make a trip to the bank to deposit some money the following morning. Ed then left for his trip. Now, when he made that phone call, he was at his friend's. He had went to his friend's house, the friend that was going sailing with him, and he placed that phone call at his friend's house. Ed then left for his trip with his buddies. On Sunday morning, Ed placed a phone call home from the boat to check in on Ellen. After calling several times and no one answered, Ed called his friend, Lynn Fredrickson, and asked him to go to the house and check on Ellen. Now, they're all good friends, and they've been friends for a long time. When Lynn arrived, he noticed the house had all the lights on, but all the doors were locked. It looked like somebody was home, but no one was answering the door. Lynn made special note of this because he said that the Shermans rarely lock their doors, so much so that he would often make fun of Ellen, saying, somebody's going to surprise you one day. Lynn poked around the house. He didn't see anything unusual, so he did find a window that was unlocked, and he crawled inside. Nothing seemed out of place, but when he screamed for Ellen, no one answered. Lynn also made a note about how cold it was in the house, more cold than it should have been. The air conditioning was running full blast. Lynn made his way through the home, landing at the couple's bedroom. Once he opened the door, he saw Ellen's body on the bed. Initially, it appeared that Ellen had been sexually assaulted because her clothing and bedding were all on the floor. There were clear signs of strangulation around her neck from some sort of ligature. An autopsy would reveal that Ellen was murdered either late Saturday night or early Sunday morning. Due to the shape of her hands and nails, she always kept her nails done up nicely. It was clear that Ellen struggled to get free from whoever or whatever was used to strangle her. Police are hoping Ellen may have left marks on the person that attacked her. The scene showed no signs of forced entry, leading investigators to believe she must have known her killer, as well as no items were missing from the house. So, obviously, it's not a robbery. Calling on the boat's radio, police contacted Ed to inform him his pregnant wife had been murdered in their home. Ed, of course, was visibly upset and barely able to talk to the officer. He ended up handing off the phone to his friend. Detective Mike Malchick was assigned to the case. Ed was brought into the station to talk to detectives, hoping to give some more details about his whereabouts and the marriage, all that good stuff. Ed told the detective that the last time he had talked to Ellen was Friday evening when he called her from his sailing friend's house to remind her about going to the bank. Ed's friend, as well as his wife, confirmed that Ed did make the phone call to his wife as they were seated nearby when he placed the phone call. As is pretty usual, detectives wanted to know more about their home life, if their marriage was happy, any affairs, you know, the usual things. What was not quite usual was what Ed was about to tell them. Ed informs Detective Mike that the couple had a unique arrangement. And, you know, Jen, we don't judge here. We don't judge on the podcast.
We don't judge at all.
The couple had an open marriage and would often invite other couples over for, shall we say, a swap-ertunity.
Nice.
See what I did there?
I do.
Because I was like, I got to think about the swapping. And okay. As if that didn't keep their hands full, Ed had a girlfriend who had, what? A child, which also happened to be his. Ed had a girlfriend on the side who had become pregnant and given birth to Ed's child.
I would think that would go against most open marriage rules, but what do I know?
I would think that would put a little damper on it.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship had been taking place for several years, and Ellen knew all about it. Nancy Prescott was Ed's co-worker. Mm-hmm. When Ellen got pregnant, she put her foot down and demanded that Ed give up the girlfriend in order to be a father and a better husband. It was time to settle down, become a family man. Ed was not happy about this, but he did agree to drop Nancy. Authorities reach out to find out exactly what Nancy was up to the weekend that Ellen was murdered, but she had a solid alibi and police believed that she was not involved. The famous Dr. Henry Lee, who, by the way, is in Savannah this weekend. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
Was called in to look at all the evidence. He discovered a weird ligature pattern around Ellen's neck. It was sort of like a zigzaggy, almost like a lace kind of pattern. You know, it had a design to it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems that that pattern was also found on the elastic around her underwear. You know how undies sometimes have the little pattern around the legs and the waist part. However, Dr. Lee determined that was not what killed her. The autopsy revealed that the cricoid cartilage in the neck was broken. This can only be accomplished by manual strangulation. Dr. Lee believed the underwear was used to throw off investigators, hoping that it would point to a sexual attack.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So she was strangled first, and then the underwear was used as a ruse. Ed was asked to take a polygraph test, and he agreed, but the results came back inconclusive. Police wanted to rule him out, but since he was at sea when Ellen was murdered, they didn't really believe he was a suspect, but they still needed to rule him out. We all know how that works.
Yep.
Police were at a dead end, but things were about to heat up, or should I say, cool down. Dun, dun, dun. Here we go, Wikipedia. Thank you very much. Rigor mortis is the third stage of death. It is one of the most recognizable signs of death, characterized by stiffening of the limbs of the corpse caused by chemical changes in the muscles, post-mortem, mainly calcium. I'm reading this verbatim from Wikipedia. In humans, rigor mortis can occur as soon as 4 hours after death. Now, contrary to folklore and common belief, rigor mortis is not permanent and begins to pass within hours of onset. Typically, it lasts no longer than 8 hours at, quote, room temperature. See where I'm going with this, Jen?
Uh-huh.
Rigor mortis.
Since the house was cold.
Mm-hmm. Rigor mortis generally peaks at 12 hours and dissipates after 48 hours, unless, of course, it's extremely hot, which would make it go faster, or extremely cold, making the process delay. Thank you, Wikipedia. As Dr. Lee was going over the details of the crime, something jumped out at him. Lynn had stated that when he entered the house, it was freezing. The air conditioner was on full blast, which, with the cooler temperatures, Ellen's body was delaying the process of rigor mortis. That means the time of death was off. It was not Saturday night or early Sunday morning, Jen. Mm-mm. In fact, it was much more likely Friday evening.
Huh. When somebody was home and not at sea?
That would be correct. This opens up the possibility that Ed could have very well murdered his wife before he left on a sailing trip. But remember, Ed called Ellen from his friend's house to tell her to make sure to make that bank deposit. The whole family was home and heard him call Ellen from the kitchen phone. The investigation was once again at a standstill. That is, Jen, until a person comes forward with an interesting little tidbit, and it is truly one for the movies. A lady comes forward and said on Friday morning, and this was the morning of the weekend that Ellen was killed, she ran into Ed at the local video store. Now, you know, Ed is sort of a ladies man. He likes ladies.
Obviously, yeah.
Of ladies. So he runs into this neighbor lady at the local video store. Now, remember, this is when you had to actually drive somewhere to rent a movie. That would be terrible. We did it, but yeah. So the two chatted for a little bit, and Ed recommended a movie to her entitled Blackout. So let me summarize a little tidbit about the movie for you. A veteran police detective, played by Richard Widmark, by the way, suspects that a local realtor and father, Alan Devlin, who underwent full facial reconstruction because of the injuries he received in a near-fatal car accident and married the nurse who tended him during his recuperation, may actually be the same man that committed the quadruple murder of his adulterous wife and their children several years earlier. After the murders, the killer used an air conditioner to try to slow decomposition of the family's remains in an attempt to establish an alibi.
Ooh, when fiction becomes reality.
Well, looky there, Eduardo Dumo. So, yeah, he's making a recommendation of this movie that the same day his wife is murdered. Now, while this is interesting, at this point, there's still really not enough that the police can do.
Yeah, but we love it when these suspects are dumb.
Not dumb. Thank you. Now, something that's a little bit unique and doesn't happen very often, an investigative grand jury was convened to go over the evidence. Sadly, its findings were inconclusive. They could not determine if he or anybody else could be responsible for Ellen's death.
What?
Just stay with me, girl. Stay with me. I know this is a doozy. Now, it seems like Ed was going to get away with all of this. He pulled one. That is until 1990, when his sailing buddy and his daughter were out for a little drive on an afternoon day. They're just, you know, hanging out, driving. He's teaching her how to drive. The daughter shared a strange memory with her dad that she'd never brought up to her dad prior to this day. Remember, this was way back when everybody had house phones. How fun was this? I was going to go into this long diatribe about some shenanigans we did when we were kids, but I didn't. But this is when houses had house phones, and often all the phones in the house use the same line. So if your teen is
party
speaking,
line.
Yep, well, no, just regular phone, meaning like, you know, the kitchen phone, it's still the same line as the one in the bedroom, right? It's one line amongst
the
whole house. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about a party line.
Nope.
My bad.
No, that's different. That's okay. Because of this, and we grew up with this, if your teen is speaking sweet nothings to their newest crush, you would either have to wait until they got off the phone to use it, or you'd pick it up and say, Jennifer, get off the phone. I need it. And then you'd be horrified, right? That your parents did that. I'm telling you, kids don't even know the struggle today that they have a phone at their hands all the time. And yeah, we had to wait.
Computer,
it could be hours.
Right.
So, Jen, it seems like good old Eddie was on the phone with his wife that Friday evening, remember? And when he was on the phone with his wife, his friend's little girl, who was 9 years old at the time, picked up the phone because she was going to call her friend. And on the other line, she heard Ed talking, but he was talking to a ringing phone line. It was ringing. No one was picking up.
Of course, because she was dead. Right?
There was no one on the other end as Ed ended the call saying, "I love you, honey," to a ringing line. The little girl remembered this, thinking it was weird, and why would Ed do that? But she'd never brought it up till now. I'm guessing she got older and kind of thought about it and started to put it together. So with this new evidence, woohoo, police would be able to seal Ed's fate as his days of being a free man were about to come to a close. Ed Sherman was arrested for the murder of his wife, Ellen Sherman. Here's how they believe it went down. Investigators believe that even though Ed claimed he would dump Nancy, the girlfriend, and be the husband that Ellen always wanted, that was not quite the story Ellen was telling her close friends. You see, Ellen had told those closest to her that she was done with the marriage. She knew Ed was never going to change. She just couldn't do it. She couldn't do it anymore. She was going to seek a divorce. Now, here's a little problem for Ed here. Good old Ed. Ellen was the major shareholder in the family business. That publishing business was on her side. So that made her the moneymaker. She was the one that brought in the real money and decided that she would leave Ed with exactly what he always wanted and deserved. Nothing. His girlfriend, and his sailboat. That's it. That's all you get, buddy. Authorities believe that that was the event which made Ed decide to kill his wife. They believe that Friday evening, Ed strangled Ellen to death if she was changing her clothes. After killing her, Ed used her underwear to wrap around her neck and make it look as if she was killed during some sort of sexual assault. Then Ed set the air conditioning to a low temperature and left for his friend's house, where he would make that fake phone call to his wife after arriving. Good old Ed thought he had fooled everyone, but he was wrong. During the trial, many of the jurors, the one thing that they really zoomed in on was the time of death, because that determined everything, right? On if it could be him or not him. Based on the evidence, they determined that Ed had the time and definitely had the motive to commit the murder. And 6 years after the crime, so he got away with this for 6 years, by the way, he was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to 50 years in prison. During his time in jail, Ed would never admit guilt, and he claimed he had no idea who would want to kill Ellen. But he did acknowledge that she really did deserve a better life and a better ending. Oh, Ed, look at you. Sadly for Ed, his time in jail wouldn't be that long. 3 years after he was convicted, at the age of 52, Ed died in prison after suffering a heart attack. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, Ed. Sorry about that.
A little justice, yeah. Wow.
So that's the story. It was a short one, but, you know, I had to work this week. Let's put it that way. You know what I'm saying.
Well, you know, okay, so he killed her, but not only that is, like, did he have to bring up that, you know, we had an open marriage, so she was probably sleeping with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That just, that's so skivvy.
Well, I think from her friends, she was not really into that. She just kind of did it to pacify him. But then when they were going to start a family, it was time to grow up. I mean, for her.
No, obviously.
Of course, Ed wants his cake and eat it too, right?
I'm like, not only did he kill her, but he's like kind of throwing trash gossip at her. Yeah.
I know, girl. I know. He just.
Dick.
Right. And just like, hey, you know what? If you see a movie and you think you're going to kill somebody and use the premise of the movie, probably not a good idea the very same day to recommend that movie to somebody. I'm just saying.
I liked this movie so much, I based my own murder on it.
Yeah. Idiot. And when I was kind of looking this up, I almost decided to do it. And it was a female that wrote, well, it was kind of like Basic Instinct. There was a girl that killed her lover. But it was exactly like a book, right? Like, that's what happened to Basic Instinct. But so going down the rabbit hole of this, I found that story, too. But I did this one instead.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's happened quite often.
I guess people just can't be creative enough to figure it out themselves. I don't know. And then
lucky for the police, then they have something to go on, right?
I guess. And then the phone call.
Yeah.
That phone call would be so easy to fix. But I don't know.
Well, back then, but if they would have checked phone records, I would think that they'd have found out that it wasn't.
Right? That's what I was thinking. There has to be a different way to do it, right? That's what I was thinking.
And did he just excuse himself? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I forgot to tell my wife to deposit a check. Can I use
it? Yeah, right when he got to his friend's house. Like that. Right. And that's a little telling too. I'd be like, really?
Total alibi. But you know what? Then again, maybe since we're used to all the, we submerge ourselves into true crime and TV shows and books that the telltale signs for us are there.
Like we could be a detective and or get away with murder.
If we weren't so damn lazy.
Not really. Are you kidding me? Not really. Neither one of us. Police would come door to door trying to sell something and I'd, I did it. I'm sorry. They'd be like, what?
I know. The guilt would overwhelm us.
So just a couple things I wanted to bring up here that I don't know if you saw, and because this is short, but number one, Dog the Bounty Hunters in Florida looking for Brian.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was on his honeymoon.
I don't know. I secretly hope Dog finds him. I really do. I think that would be amazing.
If anybody can find him, I think it's Dog.
Right?
Dwayne. Go get him, Dwayne. Yeah. God love him. He's one of those few reality stars that I actually kind of enjoy. You know,
Let's just say the look he's putting out there. I mean, come on. Not everybody can carry that off. And Dog can. Well, you know what I'm saying?
He lives his true self and God love him.
I do. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick is yesterday. I don't know if you saw this in the news and I laughed, but it's not funny, but I laughed. So I saw this picture of this mugshot and this guy, he looked pretty young. Oh boy, his face was a beat up, nose broke, black eye. He looked terrible. And I was like, what is this? I click on it. Of course I click on it. This is a 33-year-old church pastor, right? And this is not funny, but I'm glad it turned out this way. That's all I'm going to say about that. I guess he was stopping at a young boy's bus stop for school. Mm-hmm. And the little boy went home and told his dad, hey, this guy touched me inappropriately. So the dad was like, oh yeah? Okay. We're going to get to the bottom of this. So the dad went with the camera and put his little boy out there, kind of, you know, like bait to see if he'd do it. And sure enough, here comes the guy. He stops to talk to he passed the kid. He was on his bicycle, passed the kid, turned back around. This is all on video too. Turned back around, comes back, talks to the boy, puts his hand on the shoulder's boy. Then he puts it on his like hip and then down the back, right, to his booty. Uh-huh. Well, here comes dad. Dad gets out and beats the holy living heck out of him. And that's why his mugshot looked like that.
Holy crap. You're kidding.
No, but I was like, I cannot. I mean, I think it was handled probably wrong, but in a way, you know, what are you going to do? Call the police and wait for the police to get there?
No.
I don't know. So anyway, I have to say I did kind of snicker because I'm like, well, buddy, you kind of deserved it, you know?
Reap what you sow kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the little boy, I think, was 5. He's like kindergarten or something. He was a little bitty guy. Little bitty kiddo. So what do you got, Jen?
What do I have? Mm-hmm. Nothing. I have severe FOMO right now because we aren't in Savannah, Georgia for that little mini crime expo. And we didn't get to go to CrimeCon in UK due to reasons on us, not them. And yeah, I have severe FOMO. I'm like looking at all the pictures and we will be going to CrimeCon UK next year for sure. But yeah, totally missing out on that.
I can't even look at the pictures. It breaks my heart. I can't.
I know.
I just skip right over them because I was like, dang it. The only one I saw was Dr. Henry Lee, which I thought was ironic. I saw that yesterday and I was like, of course, he's in the episode we do today.
I saw two pictures with him and he was in Savannah with Sherilyn McCollum, mm-hmm. Mac, who we've met many times at CrimeCon in the U.S. She's fantastic. I love her. And then with our friend Charlie from Crime Lines. So
makes me sad.
Yep. I know. Makes me sad too. Otherwise than that, we're trying to get started on our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
Yep.
Getting all that researched and written up. And the other thing I've been doing is trying to get the house organized. So I've been watching the It's called Get Edited by Edit House or The Edit Girls or something like that.
I watched that last year on the Netflix or last spring.
Excuse me.
That's when I went and bought all those clear containers.
Uh-huh. Those celebrities drive me crazy, especially the Kardashian.
Listen, Linda. If you need to call in those two girls to organize your closet that is as large as my house, I don't know. I don't feel for you. Like, I think that, I'm just saying.
Ridiculous, and not a fan of the Kardashians anyway.
Oh, I love them.
I just can't, that episode.
I don't love them. Some of the others. They're just like a car wreck. I can't look away. Like, if it's on,
I can't.
I have to. Kim.
It's everything I can do.
So you're trying to redo your house.
Yeah, for organization, so far, the only thing I've done is sit on my butt and watch those shows.
But you're getting in.
Bitched about,
You're
all
getting
the
in the mindset to do it.
I was trying to get into the mindset because I'm like sitting here and I've got, you know, my house feels like it's falling down around me because it's that time of year where I kind of get my little seasonal depression kicks in. And so I'm sitting around the house looking at all the stuff I need to do while I'm sitting on my butt, just watching TV or scrolling on TikTok and I'm trying to get motivated to do things. And I just... sitting there seething on all the celebrities that are on the show because it's so fake. And I know it's reality TV and I know, but it drives me crazy. But yeah, so that's as far as I've gotten on organizing my house is just watching TV shows about organization.
I haven't even
thought about buying everything. So, you know, it's just the beginning of me thinking about
Jen,
organization.
There's one piece of advice that I can give you since I moved. Start throwing stuff out now. Get a dumpster. Start doing it. Because even when you think you have not very much left, you have a ton left. Trust me on that.
Got so much. I know. And it's just one of those things that I'm just going to die in this house and let my kids deal with it.
I'd be mad at you
now.
Forever, too, because I know what you got.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No.
Speaking of TV shows, and I don't think you ever watched this, but I loved it. And I'm really sad. It's Goliath. The fourth season came out on Amazon last week, and I, of course, watched it all yesterday. I love Billy Bob Thornton. I used to hate him. He used to bug me, and now I really like him. I don't know. Same thing with Matthew McConaughey, and I know I've brought that up before. But if you haven't seen Goliath on Amazon, it's based on a series of books. There's four seasons, and each season centers around something else. I love it. I think it's so
good. It's a great show. Mm-hmm.
When we were trying to do this, Goliath was just really eclectic music in it. I love it. And that was one of the shows that I liked that I thought we should base our true crime podcast theme music on was Goliath. Uh-huh. So yeah, let's check it out. What have you watched lately? Anything good?
The last thing that I really watched that had basically anything to do with crime would be the Lula Rich documentary, which was so good.
Crazy.
So good.
Right?
So crazy. And it's, you know, I had a few friends that actually sold the LuLaRoe leggings. And as I was watching the documentary and they were talking about the evolution of the brand, that's exactly what my friends did. Like all the blessed because of LuLaRoe hashtags, they did that. Yeah. Trying to get their husbands pulled into the name of the game. Mm-hmm. They did that. I mean, one actually succeeded in doing that. Mm-hmm. Husband quit his job to help
sell.
To
do it full time?
And it's, yeah.
Did they do okay? Did they make some money?
I'm not that close of friends that I could actually ask, but I know that they were selling a lot of clothes, a lot. Like right now, they're not selling LuLaRoe, but they're selling other stuff, other clothing.
Really?
Online. Mm-hmm. And like home goods and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know if that's another MLM that they're selling, but I'm not going to ask.
So I guess nobody sells that anymore, do they?
Oh,
like,
no, they
can
do.
They?
Yeah,
is
they do.
Is it still a thing? Like, is it still around?
Yeah, it's still around. And, you know, I was watching one of the girls that's in the documentary has a podcast.
Oh.
And she still kind of has friends that are involved in Lou, not really friends that are involved in LuLaRoe, but plants, I guess. Mm-hmm. And remember in the documentary where they were talking about the clothing that was arriving wet and stinking and stuff like that?
Yes.
Remember that? one of the newest things that I saw that she pointed out is somebody's now getting wet clothes again.
What's that mean?
That they might be sitting outside the warehouse again, that the clothes arriving to the house, her house, are wet.
That's so gross. Ugh.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So
it is interesting. Again,
no shade to anybody selling them. I actually love the Halloween leggings. I have a whole bunch from past when my friends were selling them, and I absolutely love them.
They are the most comfortable leggings ever. They really are.
They are. But before they started to go bad, they were. This was like at the very beginning. But like, those are my Halloween leggings. I wear them almost all year. Yeah. But it's just
always Halloween somewhere.
In my head.
Not really.
But anyway, the documentary is amazing. I loved it. It's interesting. Even my husband, that had no clue about any of it, he sat and watched it with me, and he was loving it.
The cast of characters, the wife, the husband. Yeah. And I love that our daughter married our son, right?
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, one of them was adopted, so they're not related by blood, but still, I brought that up in class the other day. So I said, if they got a divorce, what happens? Because then you still have to hang out all the time together because it's your family. Interesting. Yep.
But other than that, I haven't been doing much of anything but thinking about organizing my house.
I like it. Yeah. Thinking is the first step, Jen.
It is.
I'm telling you, just do it. It'll make you feel better.
It'd just be so nice if we were like Tabitha from Bewitched and we could just wiggle our nose and it would all be done.
Do you know what? That occurs to me every morning when I wake up and have to go to work. It's... Mm-hmm. And you and I we've talked about this forever. This is why we'd skip class when we were younger. It's not even about going to class. It's about getting up, getting ready to go, you know?
Just doing it. Well, one day we'll wake up rich and we won't have to do it anymore.
I keep waking up and I'm not rich.
I know. But in the meantime, it'll happen.
I guess.
We'll have to just keep trucking. Keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap this up because I'm going to go work on, speaking of those 12 days of Christmas, I'm going to go try to crack one of those out today and finish it up. Jen. Well, I hope you have a good week. I hope I have a good week, even more importantly.
It's well, good.
About me. Thanks.
It is. It always has been.
Always will be. Thank you. But until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast, or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Hey, Nico.
Hey, Nico.
Started that off with a little burp. I apologize, Nico.
Sorry. Let me get a drink. Hold on. I just had nachos. You know, they're still
morning
in my throat.
Breakfast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Breakfast champions. Detectives want to know about their home life.
Say detective again. Detectives.
I know. I got cheese in my throat. Hold on. The autopsy revealed that the croided. Is that how you say that?
Carotid.
Carotid?
Is it carotid artery?
Cartilage. No, cricoid. I think it's cricoid. Hold on. God dang it. It's doing so good. Contrary to folk.